There was request during the week for a talk. It was one of those quirky requests from somebody who asked, can you please give a talk on how I can stop getting angry when looking at sport? And I was playing around with that as an interesting topic, and then sort of wanted to extend it or deepen it, whichever way you look at it, in just talking about the quite dysfunctional way we look at winning and losing in life. So this talk is on winning and losing, and all the problems which misunderstanding, you know, what winning and losing means, creates in our own life and in the world in general. It's because you all know that ever since you went to your first school, straight away that winning and losing became an important part of your life. You know, the winners, you know, became the people with all of the presents and the praise, and they get so many rewards, and everybody else became losers. And even the very word, being a loser, is a very, very bad word to call somebody. It's a term of abuse. And because of that, the obsession which we had when we were very young, and which is growing in our modern society, of separating this world out into winners and losers, is a cause of so many social problems. And it has nothing at all to do with spirituality. In fact, spirituality goes in a totally different direction. And a resurgence of people's interest in spiritual truths is really going to help heal the wounds of winning and losing. Because you all know that winning and losing, it's not just one person wins and one person loses. In the real life in which we live, it's just one person wins and many people lose. So many people sort of get hurt by the so-called judgment, are you a winner or are you a loser? And that's something which I've seen in my early years of my life. Winning and losing was there, but it wasn't so important. Maybe that was one of the reasons why, even though I had a good brain, I was never competitive. And never was competitive. And that's why I never excelled in sports. I liked playing soccer, but the very last game of soccer I ever played, you know, was at university. And the team which I was playing for, all of us turned up for the game, and only 9 of the opposition turned up. And it was such an unbalanced match that we were leading about 5 or 6 nil at half time. At which point I went up to the captain of my side and said, can I please play for the other side in the second half to make it even, to make a game of it? And my captain swore at me and said, you can't do that! At which point I realized for some people winning was more important than anything else, even though the quality of the game and your enjoyment was totally diminished, winning was the only thing. And I was so disgusted that that was the last game I ever played, soccer, because for me, winning was never the most important thing. In fact, those few games I used to play as a schoolboy, yeah, we would sort of try and do our very, very best. But, you know, this is, you know, old time. Many of you may remember this if you're as old as I am. At the end of the match, it was the winners would say 3 cheers for the other school. Hip, hip, hooray. And there was a sense that you would actually praise even the losers, because the whole idea of winning and losing was not as emphasized as it is today. And of course, now we have TV shows where it's all about who's going to win. In my day, when we went dancing, it was just for pleasure. Now it's to win the competition. And there's no sense of like just doing it for joy anymore. Even you can compare sort of Olympic Games swimming to fish swimming. Fish do it for joy. And they go damn fast, much faster than sort of human beings. But they do it just for fun. A fish is not in it to win a gold medal. And you can see just sometimes people, indigenous people, dancing. They're not doing it sort of to make sure they get through the next round. They're doing it for joy, for fun. And why is it that these days it seems whatever we do, even cooking, is a competition? And it's soon going to happen that we're going to have a league table of monks who give talks to see who can win. We're going to have Olympic Games meditation. Who can sit the longest without moving? We're going to have more competition and who's going to be the winners and who's going to be the losers over my dead body. Because there are some things in life, and the most important things in life, it's not about winning and losing. It's just the whole attitude is missing out on just what life is really about. What happens in our life, because we're obsessed with winning, we try so hard, and we think we have to win. And this is one of the wonderful insights which I had a long time ago. Ajahn Brahm, you don't have to win. There's no need to win. And you can have a beautiful, peaceful, happy life. Let other people worry about winning and losing. I'm enjoying other things in life. Because I've seen those people who are obsessed with winning. What they do, they try really hard. They put so much effort and striving into the life. They screw their brains up. They wreck their bodies. You know what it's like to strive. You know that tension, that tightness in the mind. You know what it does to your body. You can actually feel it with a little bit of mindfulness. You're killing yourself. And because we're striving so hard, there's one of two things happen. You do win. What happens if you win? You have to strive even harder the next time. Screw yourself up to even just to improve your personal best. And your personal best is never good enough. You have to jump higher, run faster, do better, achieve more, screwing yourself up even more until the time comes you fail. You come second. You lose. And what does it do to you then? You feel your whole reason for existence is being challenged. You're not good enough. You're not up to standard. And I think you all know what that feels like. Sooner or later it happens to everybody. You're not good enough. You're not up to standard. You're a loser. Now that's a great sense of depression, a great sense of lack of self-worth, and all the problems of lack of happiness, lack of even being able to smile, which comes from that. We believe we're a loser. So eventually everybody loses. For those people who it takes a long time to lose, they get this what we call the arrogance of winning. They won so many times, they think, my goodness, they are an elite person, they're a better person, there's something special about them. I am a winner, look at me, look at my success, look at all my degrees, look at my house, my car, my women, my men, just how many times I'm in the newspapers. That sort of winner makes people very arrogant, and they're rotten people to live with. I don't know if you've ever had any sort of brushes with famous people. And some of those famous people, they're just so difficult even to be around. So arrogant, so demanding, they think that, you know, they are God. There's this one story which, well, here's one joke which just came to mind, not planned at all. There was these four women over in sort of Cottesloe somewhere having coffee in the morning. And they were talking about their sons, as mothers often do, very proud of their children. And the first mother said, oh, just my son has just become ordained as a priest. I'm so proud of him. You know when women come in the room, so they genuflect and call him father. And the second woman said, no, that's nothing. That's nothing. My son ordained a long time ago. He's now a bishop. And when women come into the room, they bow their head and they call him, you know, your grace. And the third woman, nothing, nothing. My son, he's a cardinal.
when women come in the room, they get on their knees and they call him, "Your Eminence, Your Eminence." And then the fourth woman said, "Nothing, nothing. I could do much better than that. My son, he's not at all interested in religion. He plays football for the Dockers. He's 6'6", tall, blonde, gorgeously handsome, and filthy rich." When women come to the room, they don't bow, they don't kneel, they fall on the floor and say, "Oh my God, my God, my God." So who's the winner? And no one is really a winner. It's an old joke, but that's a famous one. But why is it that sort of people just work so hard? Because when people do get into such positions of winning, they do become arrogant, because they do really feel that they own their success. And because they own their success and they've done so well, they feel they are better than other people. There's an arrogance. There's a sense of sort of superiority, which I think when you see, it's just horrible to be around. And I've been around such people, you just really want to get out of the room as soon as possible. There's something lacking in them. There's some lack of heart, there's some lack of beauty in sort of in the arrogance of successful people. They think they're winners, but as far as I'm concerned, they've lost the spiritual life. So those of you who've lost early in life, I think you're ahead of the game. When you've realized that, the arrogance is not really going to make much. The arrogance is going to create a lot of pain and unhappiness. It's going to stop you having beautiful relationships with other people. It's going to separate you. It's going to make you alone and afraid of the other who becomes your competitor. So it's wonderful to be able to lose early on in life so that we do not get this arrogance, this conceit, which creates a greater sense of self and a greater sense of control. But eventually, everybody has to come to that losing. And when they do lose, that's when they feel this tremendous sense of failure. They take it personally. They think there's something wrong with them. And the sooner you realize that there's nothing wrong with failing, that failing is beautiful, it's part of life, and just because you fail, you're not a loser. And when we just feel that failing is part of life, we can accept that, it's okay to make mistakes, it's okay to fail, there's a huge sense of relief. It's understanding, accepting your nature. Even the Buddha said, he called these like two of the eight worldly dhammas, which no one can avoid. It's part of life, an essential part of life. Those eight so-called worldly dhammas was happiness and suffering, praise and blame, fame and dishonor, and the last one, winning and losing. He said, this happens for all of people in life, and you can't have one without the other. You'll get your fair share of these things. But just because you lose, you're not a failure. Just because you're winning, you're not an elite person. One of the things which the Buddha actually did try very, very hard in his life, and he failed at this. The Buddha was a failure on this as well. He didn't always get things right. He tried really, really hard to get rid of the caste system in India. To say this caste system where people are judged as winners and losers on where they were born and who their father was, he said, sucks. It's not right, it's not fair, it's not just, it's wrong. And he tried very, very hard to sort of overcome and just abolish that caste system. But as you all know, that is still there. In India, and many of you Sri Lankans know it is still there in Sri Lanka to a much lesser degree. And apparently, even though I've left the UK for, 36 years ago, there is still a class system in Britain, even today, despite all of people's hard work to try and abandon such irrational, illogical, and very socially harmful ideas of judging a person on their birth rather than on what they do. But nevertheless, that is still there, winners and losers, because of where you were born. So Buddha was actually saying this is part of life, but we should understand that winning and losing does not mean you're a failure, that this is part of life. And so when we don't take winning and losing so seriously, when we don't make an obsession of winning and a fear of losing, we find we can have more peace and happiness in this life. Now that winning and losing is not just at sport, but remember the reason why people do get angry at sport is because people take it personally when you lose. And we don't realize that, you know, it's beyond our sort of, it's beyond our control when we lose. If you play soccer, the ball is round, it can go either way. If you play sort of Australian rules football, no, the ball is just, it's so bent it can go any old way. So who knows who can win? I remember just one of the most enjoyable sports I ever played was a game of table tennis when I was travelling as a 17-year-old, you know, from London to Spain. I was going hitchhiking, you know, through North Africa with my guitar and just not even a backpack, I just had a sleeping bag, and that was all. You know, really doing it very simple, you know, as a 17-year-old going out to see the world. And with my friend, we sort of got a ferry from Southampton to Bilbao in Spain. And on that very cheap ferry, just nothing to do all day, I remember playing table tennis. And because we were going across the Bay of Biscay, which was always very rough, you know, the ball would always go straight. But for us on the boat, because we were moving, the ball would suddenly dart left or dart right. So it was totally unpredictable which way that ball was going to go because the boat was rocking and you were playing table tennis at sea. It was one of the most enjoyable games because I knew that if I won or lost, it was nothing to do with me, it was just chance. Which means that I could play sport for fun. And winning and losing had no relevance at all. And why is it that we spoil a good game by having to win and being so afraid of losing? Now that's just an ordinary game. Now if you think of like life and how much, you know, we are into winning and afraid of losing, whether it's in relationships, because in a relationship, man and woman, or man and man, girl and girl, is it really about who's the winner and who's the loser? If you are into winning and afraid of losing, your relationship will always be trying to dominate your partner. And you know what happens then. You know, you get into all sorts of relationship problems. Relationship is not about winning and losing. This is a spiritual path, remember, relationship. So please, no winner, no loser. That's not important. And even failing is not important anymore. It's part of life. So when we can accept that and it's not winning, not losing, we don't have this dominance in the relationship. Too often in relationship, you know, one person wants to win, the other one is afraid of giving away and being a loser. That whole idea is really totally ridiculous. And it's also dysfunctional. It causes too many problems and suffering. Instead of winning and losing, we're just enjoying this wonderful time together. Now, sometimes the ball goes to the left. It's nobody's fault. It's just the boat is rocking that way. That's the way the sea swells. As it goes to the left, just the way that goes. It's nobody's fault, no one to blame. And because there's no one to blame, there's no one to praise, there's no one who's a winner, no one who is a loser, we're just enjoying this beautiful life together without the winning and losing. When there's a winner and a loser, someone gets the prize and the other one does without. And that's really, really unfair. And because of this winner and loser business, whether it's in relationships, whether it's in life, I've seen it so often, I've tried to sort of overcome that. Even, I'm not quite sure when I last told this story, I think it was quite recently, but it fits in right now. That time when I was a school teacher, and even in school there's winners and losers, the people who come top of the class, the people who come bottom of the class, and that one time when I was a school teacher, gave out the results, the report cards at the end of the year, in my class of 30 kids, of course one child had to come 30th. Was he a failure? he thought so, because I saw him as I gave him the report card. You've come bottom of the class. His jaw dropped. He didn't realize. He knew he'd done badly, but come 30th. How embarrassing that is. And how terrible that would be when he goes home that evening to give that report card to his parents. Bottom of the class. What is his mum and dad going to do to him? And I could see he was getting so upset and so depressed. I was a compassionate man. I can't, you know, just stand around when somebody's suffering like that. So I went next to that boy. And they all knew I was a Buddhist. You know, even, you know, so how long ago was that? 37, 38 years ago. Because even when I was at that school, you know, all the teachers had to take assembly. And when it was my week to take the assembly, I taught them meditation. It was the first time I taught people meditation. 650 kids from 11 to 18. I say, right, sit down, straight backs, and watch your breath. And I did that. And everybody followed orders. It was only afterwards one of the teachers said, what would you have done if somebody started giggling? Because you know what it's like, kids, when one starts, they all start. I'd have lost it. But I never thought that would happen. And because I never thought that would happen, everybody actually was quiet and they meditated. And it was no joke, it was the quietest time that school has ever been. 650 children, absolutely silent, meditating. And you know what, afterwards, it's only 5 minutes, they gave me a round of applause afterwards. And the kids loved it. Just a bit of stillness. But anyway, that this was, many years ago. People knew I was a Buddhist. And so at the end of the year, when I gave out the report card, this kid came 30th. And he was getting very upset. And I had to teach him some Buddhism. I went up to him and told him, you come 30th, the last in this whole class. You know, there's something in Buddhism we call the Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva in Buddhism is someone who sacrifices their happiness for the sake of others. And I said, this is what you've done this year. You've sacrificed yourself by taking the 30th position in this class of 30 out of compassion for all your fellow students who don't have to take this terrible position. You've done this voluntarily out of the beauty of your heart so that no one else has to face their parents with this terrible report card. You're such a great sacrifice. You haven't thought about yourself. You thought about all the other children in the class. Because you just want them to be happy. You don't care about yourself. You're so selfless. You're a bodhisattva. And this year we're going to give you the bodhisattva prize for becoming bottom of the class. What I was doing there was actually saying that you're not a loser. Because in Buddhism, the people who come top, they're the arrogant smart asses. They've got no compassion. They've got no humility. They just up themselves. So just the real people, the ones who sacrifice themselves for others, the ones who just take that bottom position so that no one else does. That is why I once did actually contemplate starting a Buddhist football team, run on Buddhist principles. And how would that run? It meant if the other team wanted the ball so much, you would give it to them. Of course, it's compassion. And if they couldn't score a goal, you know, in soccer, you'd score it for them. You want them to be happy. May all other beings be happy and well. Winning and losing was not the point. It was just making people happy, being kind. When I mentioned that story at one group, they said, oh, we've already got a Buddhist football team. It's called the West Coast Eagles. They're not winning at all. They're always losing. For those of you listening overseas, that's the local AFL, Australian Football League team, who's second bottom of the ladder, I think, or somewhere down there. They're not doing very well because they're the Bodhisattva team this year. Sacrificing their own happiness so other people could do better than they. But that's a wonderful little concept there, which is part of Buddhism. The fact is, it's not winning. That's not the point. What is the point? It's like being kind and being friendly and having a wonderful life together. Having a good game rather than being the one who comes out on top. And if one understands what I'm talking about, that this winning and losing is making the wrong priorities in life. And when we make winning the priority in life, it means being dominant, being the winner, being proud, being arrogant. There's something, again, spiritually rotten about that. Creating a lot of conceit, thinking one is better than other people. Another thing which I was very impressed with when I first investigated Buddhism was this idea of conceit. And I always understood, I thought that pride, you know, was obviously something which no spiritual tradition should really accommodate, you know, saying I'm better than you, I've got the best tradition, you know, that Buddhism is better than Christianity, all that sort of conceit business of thinking somebody is better than others, that never really sort of gelled with me. There was something wrong with that. And when I came across Buddhism and I heard the Buddha actually teach, there's actually three types of conceit and they're all morally bankrupt. They're all signs of lack of wisdom, of total delusion, not understanding the way things truly are. And those three types of conceit, you know, all illusion, and all dangerous illusion, those three types of conceit is the obvious one, thinking you're better than somebody else. And the second one is thinking you're worse than somebody else. That is also conceit. And the third one shocked me, thinking you're the same as everybody else. All a total delusion. And you should know that. There's no two people in this room who are the same as each other. You're not equal. Nor is there anyone in this room better than anybody else, nor worse than anybody else. Because once we have that better, that worse, or the same, we just have more league tables, more winners and losers, and all the psychological problems which come from winning, losing, or being in the middle of the table. And so Buddha said, no, there's no best, there's no worse, there's no the same. That whole idea of comparison and judging. He said, now that's where the problem lies. Because winners and losers, we're just judging that somebody was better than somebody else. Another person was worse, and when you have a draw, they're the same. That whole judging is bankrupt of wisdom and is harmful of kindness. So when we don't judge other people, we don't compare them, we don't put them into league tables. It means we are being able to love a person for who they are rather than putting them into a league table, judging them. Because as soon as you start judging a person, you start judging yourself. When you judge yourself, you can always be better, which means you're not good enough, which means you get depressed, you get upset, you get angry. And you get all the psychological problems. But imagine if you don't even judge yourself. When you don't judge yourself, you know, this is just who I am. This is just how I speak. This is just, you know, how I behave. This is just how Ajahn Brahm gives his talks. When you don't judge yourself, then you become at peace with yourself. You relax. And the strange thing is that sometimes we judge ourselves thinking by that way we can become better people. If I can actually find out where I am in my spiritual life, then I can maybe do better. No, you're missing the point that way. If you start judging yourself, you just screw up the spiritual path. You're not at peace with yourself. You haven't got any kindness or compassion towards yourself. When you judge yourself, you're trying to actually you're hating yourself. You know, you want to be better, you judge yourself, you want to do a little bit better, which means you hate where you are now. You're not at peace with where you are now. So all judging means you can do better. It's more striving, it's more struggle, more no peace in this life. Now, one of the stories which comes to my mind now, it was one of these out-of-the-body experience stories, which was written in a German book, which one of our monks translated for me, and it stuck in my mind ever since. There was a young boy who was having some sort of operation or had an accident, and he floated out of his body, you know, a near-death experience. And he said he floated out of his body and went a long way away through this forest where he came to a shed, and in the shed there was a guy with a book. And he said, "What's your name? You weren't in the book, therefore, you know, you can't die yet, you have to go back." But he said, "No, since you're here, just have a look at what goes on." And you know, he remembered all of this, and he told people, and it got put in this book. And the interesting thing was that this next person who came along was a German farmer. And this guy with the book said, "Oh, your name's down here, you're dead, but I want to ask you a question. You know, have you ever killed any animals while you've been a farmer?" He said, "Oh, no, I never killed any animals." And the guy with the book turned around to the kid, "See, even though he's dead, he's lying through his teeth." It's amazing just how many times people lie, thinking people don't understand what you're up to. People understand. But then, as he was talking with this farmer who just died, there was another guy who just went right past the shed and way up into the sky. And the little boy said, "Aren't you going to ask him what he's done?" And this is the reason I remember this story, because the person with the book said, "No, that man has never judged anyone throughout his whole life. Therefore, we're not going to judge him. He's off to some heaven realm." And I thought, wow, what a beautiful little anecdote. Because he never judged anybody else, therefore he won't judge himself. Therefore he will be at peace. Therefore he will be free. Therefore he'll be in heaven in this life and in heaven in any future lives as well. Because all that judging which we do, that creates the hell realms, that creates the pain, that creates the trouble, that creates the winning and losing. It's just another judgment game. How on earth can you judge anybody? Even the whole idea of winning and losing, just because a person scores more goals in a sort of a soccer match, have they won that match? To me, just, you know, coming out with the biggest score doesn't mean you've won. Conventionally speaking, according to the secular world, yes, you've won. But to me, the team which has been kinder, they've done the best, they've really maybe, you know, haven't had as many resources, expensive players, as great facilities, but they've, you know, really sort of, you know, done really well, they're the winners. It's not just the people who score the most goals or the most points are the winners. Not in my book. So you don't judge that way. How can you judge? How can you know so much about the other person or even about yourself to be able to judge them? And a great thing happens when you stop judging, when there are no winners and losers. They're not the same. They're not worse. They're not better. You just can't judge them. Which means you just accept people for who they are, without sort of all this judging business. It means you also accept yourself as you are, without all this judging business. Again, it was a wonderful insight, you know, for me, not to have to keep judging myself and keep asking, "Now, how was the talk this evening? How was my meditation? How many marks out of 10 are you going to give this talk tonight?" All that sort of stuff, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Because what it really does is, who can actually say? Who is actually able to judge? Who is actually able to know enough about how I feel, about you feel, about all the situations to give a fair judgment? It's totally inappropriate. And you know what it's like to be judged. Maybe this week someone has judged you unfairly. They've misunderstood what you did or what you said or what you meant, and they've assumed, you know, some sort of bad intention or bad action or something bad about you. You've been judged unfairly. If it's not today, many, many times in your life you've been badly judged, unfairly judged. You know how much it hurts. Now, you know, other people have done that to you. How many times you've done that to other people? You know, it's just, it's wrong, it's hurtful, and creates too much unhappiness in this world. But more than that, you know you've judged other people unfairly, as other people have judged you unfairly. How many times have you judged yourself unfairly? Now we're getting to the nub of much of the suffering in life. We judge ourselves so unfairly. Why is that? Because the winning and losing ethic, which has been rammed into us since we're very, very young, which is reinforced in the sports which we watch, in the TV shows which we spend too much time looking at, in our career, in which again there are winners and losers. It's rammed into us so much that when we start judging ourselves and judge ourselves unfairly, we always end up as losers. How many of you really think you're a winner? In life, winners are few, losers are many, when you start judging. This is a problem. So it's best not to judge at all. Just to accept yourself for who you are, to make peace with yourself, and not to give yourselves marks out of 10 how you've done today. If you start doing things like that, you'll end up as losers. And when you end up as losers, lack of self-esteem, depression. And this is also where anger comes from. When one feels bad about oneself, one gets angry at other people. When one feels good about oneself, you don't need to get angry at anybody. All anger comes from that person getting angry, feeling rotten about themselves, having no happiness, feeling down, depressed, upset, despondent, and they just take it out on other people. All anger is the person just taking out their suffering on somebody else, spreading it around. You never find happy people getting angry. Content people don't get angry. That's one of the signs where the person really understands, you know, their spiritual path. They just don't get angry at other people. That's why if ever you have any monk or a nun sitting up here and you want to try and find out where that particular monk is at, then just don't listen to their talk. Try and make them angry. And see if they bite the bullet and they really do get angry. Because that's always the case. There's a classic story in Buddhism about this monk. This monk had been he was a young monk and he really wanted to become enlightened. You know, he was really diligent and very strict with himself, and he was meditating in this monastery. This was supposed to be in China many centuries ago. And after a while he said, well look, my meditation, my practice is getting very, very strong, but I think it's a bit too noisy in the monastery. Not far away is a lake. In the middle of the lake is an island. It's uninhabited. Can I build a little hermitage on that island? And all I would ask is just once a week, if you could just send food to me, and I'll just look after myself, and I'll spend the rest of the time in solitude meditating. And the abbot of the monastery said, why not? So, you know, I'll help, and I'll sort of get the funds for your hut. So the monk made a very simple hut, and then every week one of the attendants would row over from the monastery taking supplies, and the monk, he was so strict he wouldn't even say anything, he would just write on a piece of paper, you know, what he wanted for the next week. And he was living like that for 3 years as a hermit in silence, only seeing the attendant once a week. As after 3 years, he decided he was enlightened, that he'd made it. And what do you do when you become enlightened to get off that island? So what he did, when the attendant visited, he wrote on a piece of paper that he wanted, not just ordinary piece of paper, he wanted some parchment and a quill and some fine ink. He was going to write some calligraphy. So the next week, the parchment, the ink and the quill came. And the monk had 1 week to write his calligraphy. So he meditated very, very deeply. And then one afternoon when he came out of a deep meditation, when his mind was very clear, he unrolled the parchment, he dipped the quill in the ink, and he wrote in exquisite calligraphy. You know, some of these Chinese calligraphy is worth a fortune. It's like, you know, they are works of art. And he wrote, you know, in these Chinese characters, the translation went this, so the diligent monk alone for 3 years is no longer moved by the four worldly winds. The diligent monk alone for 3 years is no longer moved by the four worldly winds. Now that in Buddhism meant you're enlightened. know, any winds, you just don't move at all. And he wrote that, and he realized that was a very beautiful piece of calligraphy and a very eloquent way of showing that you've done your job and finished, you're enlightened. And he rolled up the piece of parchment when it dried and he gave it to the attendant the next time, saying, you know, on the piece of paper, give it to the abbot. And he waited a week for the abbot's response. And when the response came, it was his scroll of parchment again. And he opened up the scroll of parchment and his eyes got wide and his jaw dropped when he saw the abbot had scrawled on the first line of his beautiful calligraphy, the diligent monk, he scrawled the four letters, F-A-R-T, fart. And he looked to the next line, alone for 3 years, this time in capital letters, F-A-R-T. He's no longer moved. And now F-A-R-T with an exclamation mark next to it, by the four worldly winds and the biggest four letters F-A-R-T underlined with three exclamation marks. And that was his beautiful calligraphy. Totally ruined by this stupid abbot. And that monk was really upset. He sort of ran down to the side of the edge of the island, called the attendant back, and said, take me to that stupid abbot. And so the attendant came back and rode him over to the monastery. The monk stormed into the abbot's room, slammed a piece of parchment on the table, and said, you've just ruined this beautiful piece of calligraphy, and you don't even understand I'm enlightened, stupid abbot. And that's when the abbot unrolled a piece of paper, stood up and said very silent, very calmly, he read out his poem, the diligent monk alone for 3 years is no longer moved by the four worldly winds. Yet you, monk, have been blown over the lake by four farts. At which, and that's a traditional Buddhist story, I'm not making that up, at which point the monk realized that he wasn't enlightened after all. He went back over to the island and meditated for many, many more years. So again, you don't judge things, even in the spiritual path. You know, that's one of the reasons why that, you know, sometimes people ask the monks or the nuns who come here, are you enlightened yet? You know, we never answer that question. There's many reasons, and one of those reasons is because if you were enlightened, you would never say so. You're not judging. Being enlightened is not some attainment. Not something which, oh, no, now I've got my degree, I've got my BA, now my MA, now my PhD. This is not sort of things of the world. This is a totally different direction. This is not being anyone, not judging yourself, being free of all those judgments. Because if you have those judgments of yourself, I am enlightened, I am this, I am that. If people come along, if you ever hear anybody sitting up here or any other place and say, I'm enlightened, you can know for sure they're not. Simply because they're making this sort of judgment of themselves, who they think they are, which is totally against the wisdom of the Buddha. We all know that one of the deep teachings of Buddhism is emptiness, non-self. If there's no one in there, who's there to be enlightened? If there's no one in there, who's there to be judged? How can you judge a river or a wind? It's just this beautiful process, it's part of nature. And it's the fact if you do judge people, or do judge yourself, that's a sign you haven't understood the truth. It's a sign you're not free yet. It's a sign when you have that judgment, it's still about winning and losing. In the path of spirituality, it's not about winning and losing. It's not about sort of attaining. As my teacher Ajahn Chah would often say, we meditate not to attain things, but to let go of things. To see how much we can disappear. Not just how bigger ego we can make and have more attainments and more things to boast about and to say how good we are, how great we are. And so when we start understanding this, it does mean that we understand just how this path of Buddhism, this path of letting go, this path of non-judging, is essential for a spiritually healthy life. Even in Mahayana, the third Zen patriarch said, the path is easy for those without preferences. That was a very famous say, you might say, for those who don't judge, which is the same as having no preferences. The path is easy for those people who are not judging. And I think you know that. If somebody comes up to you and they're not judging you, how do you relate to them? They're this beautiful person who's not judging you at all. I think I mentioned recently somewhere, please excuse me, I give so many talks, I don't know which talk I gave here, but I do remember just one of the great monks which I had the privilege to meet was a monk called Ajahn Tate, whose monastery was on the banks of the Mekong River, just to the west of Nong Khai, a long way to the west. And he was one of these monks. When I first went to see him, I went into his presence, and you realize straight away, this was a person who's never going to judge you. And I felt just so peaceful, because any other place which I've been in my life, I was always feeling that somebody was going to judge me, assess my performance, and say, you're a good monk, a bad monk, or somewhere in between. And that was so much pressure on me. And here was one of the first times I met a being where I could sit there and there was no judging at all. He would accept me totally for who I was, wise or stupid. And that felt so wonderful. And I didn't want to leave that place. Now, hopefully you've met people like that who will never judge you. You don't have to live up to some sort of goal to please them. You don't have to do things to sort of gain their love. They just give it totally freely, not asking anything of you, not judging you, not assessing you. That's such a rare experience in this world. You go to the shopping center, you go to work, you go at home, your partner you feel is always judging you, and you can never relax. You never feel you're totally loved. Kids, mum and dad are always judging me. I'm never good enough at school, I'm never good enough at this, always being judged. They never feel they're loved. They can never feel peace. So being in the presence of someone who just would not judge you, to him there was no winners and losers. And it taught me, from experience, the beautiful being in the presence of someone who just accepts you for who you are, whatever that happens to be. And that taught me a lot about what enlightenment is, what peace is. Not trying to live up to some ideal, not trying to sort of win some goal, but to actually to totally abandon the very idea of winning, to see if you can get beyond, the perception of judging, and just to look at someone and love them for who they are, to be at peace with them for who they are. And look, I've been around some really, really strange characters. Just yesterday I was in, the secure ward of Greylands, just meeting a few people. And just, let alone being in sort of, visited Broadmoor, the prison for the criminally insane in sort of England. I would say not as a resident, only as a visitor. Been to some of these places. But it's wonderful when you don't judge anybody. You can see that person in those institutions where everyone else is trying to assess them. And you just don't assess them at all. You don't judge them. They're not a loser because they're in jail. They're not a winner because they're in some big mansion in Peppermint Grove. You don't judge them at all. They're just a being, another person on this planet. Totally unique, not better, not worse, not the same as anybody else. So you don't judge them. Which means you can love them. You can be at peace with them. And they can actually realize at least there's one being in this world will accept them totally for who they are. They don't have to try and live up to somebody else's expectations. They don't have to struggle to be something different than they are. There's a huge amount of growth, peace and freedom, and all the very reasons why people do these stupid things, that to get themselves into jail or in these places, or their psychosis can actually disappear there when they're not judged, when they're accepted, just as you will know. If you would find a partner who could love you for who you were and you didn't have to live up to them at all, live up to any expectations, wouldn't that be bliss? At last is somebody you can just be yourself, and you're not being judged and assessed. You don't have sort of some exam to take every time you go home. You don't have some pressure on you to pass every time you go to work. You don't have this struggle just to be accepted every time you're with your friends. You just be yourself, because no one is judging you, and you're not judging other people. And that's real peace, that's real freedom. Which is why that if you ever find anybody who says, Ajahn Brahm is the best monk, stupid, he's not the best monk. He's not the worst monk, he's not the same as every other monk. Everyone is absolutely totally different. But just please don't judge anybody, don't judge me, and don't judge yourself either. And especially the person you live with. Try it on them first of all. Just to say, look, I'm not going to judge you anymore. So you can at least be with somebody who's going to accept you for who you are. Going back to that story with this monk Ajahn Tet in northeast Thailand, he's dead now. You know, he was one of these guys when I first went to Thailand. He was in the hospital with cancer, and it was terminal. And they sort of basically, because he was a famous monk, had the king of Thailand's physicians were looking after him. And they gave up, said, nothing more we can do, you're going to die. So he said, well, if I'm going to die, I might as well die in my monastery. So he left and went up to his monastery in sort of the northeast. About 30 years later, he died of old age. I love those little stories. You don't know what's going to happen. So he went to die, and maybe 25 years later when he died of old age. But anyway, his cancer just disappeared. But, you know, somebody once said, they gave this very beautiful simile. It's like, they said it's like people have got invisible spikes coming out from their sides. This is a spike simile. And some people have got these very long spikes, and they're really sharp. And on the end of the spikes are sort of, you know, other barbs as well. And you know such people, the very spiky people, when they come into the room, you feel so uncomfortable straight away. You know, they're just so spiky. And it's a nice, lovely little idea. Most people have got average spikes, just like you. In other words, you know, they can come into the room, you don't feel anything, but you get too close, you get scratched. You know, when you try and form a relationship with someone, get too close, personal space, mate, scratch. You know such people. You can get close enough, but they've got their limits. So some people have got no spikes at all. They're not going to judge you, they're not going to scratch you, and you feel you can come as close as you want, and you're totally safe. That was that simile of that monk. And it's so beautiful to actually receive real love. No, you're not going to be judged at all. Even though my father told me, door of my heart's open to you. No, he didn't have no total love. It was pretty close. But he would still be judging me and just, you know, hoping I'd be do better. You know, blaming me for listening to Jimi Hendrix when I should be watching, listening to Frank Sinatra, who he thought was much better. But some people just got no spikes at all. They're totally non-judging. And they tell you, but now that, if anything, is a winner. When you're not so judging about winning and losing at all. Which means you're totally free from the striving of life to attain, to get, to be something you never will be. To win a competition which you never will win. Like so many people are doing. If you understand that, you can watch a game of soccer on the TV or football. It doesn't matter who wins, it's a great game. And you realize you can't control these things. I've seen people at airports, you know, just passing by, they're watching a game of football or soccer or tennis, and they're shouting at the screen. You know, as if they can influence the match by how hard they shout. And that's actually what happens, because when people watch a TV, whether it's a World Cup or football or tennis, you're under the delusion that if you shout hard enough or if you exert some will, you can actually influence the match. There's no way will you influence that match. It's going to win or lose despite you. So just shut up, stop shouting. They can't hear you. Even if you're actually at the match itself, you know, sort of over here, Subiaco Oval, and the Dockers are playing the Eagles or something, our local football teams, you shout that they can't hear you. They're just too focused on the game. It's just some noise in the background. That's all they hear. So look, all that shouting, all that anger, it doesn't influence the game. What it does influence is it influences your state of happiness or suffering. You're being absolutely stupid, getting angry, or even getting depressed, or even just getting overjoyed when your team actually wins. That's even the worst delusion. You see, when your team wins, everybody celebrates and they go absolutely crazy and bananas. They're really bananas and crazy by celebrating when they win, because all they're doing is just opening themselves up for suffering the next day when they lose. It's nothing to do with people's ability. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose in life. The worldly dhammas, this has to happen. But the spiritual path realizes that this is just destroying people's friendships, happiness, love and peace. There's a danger to such sport, because we take that competition into our workplace, into our families, and family becomes winners and losers. Our workplace becomes winners and losers. And life is just a competition. It's always struggling to get to the top and never being able to reach that. And thereby just having no happiness, peace, and missing the point of life. It's not winning and losing. It's just loving, finding peace. Not if you win, but with who you are. Learning how to rest, learning how to enjoy this moment, learning how to be. It's already good enough. You don't need to win. You don't need to be better than you already are. Just need to accept yourself for who you are and be yourself. And you find that if, you know, once you accept yourself as you are and be yourself, you find you're already beautiful enough. And that's the sort of the goal of our spiritual life. Not to try and be any better or any worse, but just to be at peace with yourself as you are. Just to stop judging. You're not better, you're not worse, you're not the same. You're just you, that's all. There's not any other being in this whole planet the same as you. There's never any sort of, if you look at sort of a little flower, there's never one flower anywhere else in the world like the one in your garden. Isn't that very beautiful to understand? There's never any other being just like you anywhere in the whole universe. You're not better, you're not worse, you're not the same. So stop judging yourself. There's not another being in the whole universe like the person you live with. They're totally unique. They're not the best, they're not the worst. They're not the same, they're not average. They're just them, that's all. If you know that, you can actually learn how to love them and be a person with no spikes. And maybe they can also be spikeless as well. They have a wonderful time together. And maybe we can take off the spikes in all other people in this world. So when we don't judge each other, we can love each other for who we are. And much of the problems, psychological, social and health problems, will vanish in this world. We're not spending so much time competing with each other and worrying how we're going in the so-called World Cup of life. We can just be and enjoy ourselves. So that's the talk about no winning, no losing, no the same. And thereby you don't have to get angry when you're watching the TV sports, nor do you have to get angry watching your husband or watching your wife. You can be totally at peace. Oh, there was one joke I was going to say. Well, should I say, oh, okay, please don't judge me, but this is just my nature. This was the one about the husband was reading the newspaper. He'd been married to this woman for many, many years. And she turned around and said to his wife, said, darling, what would you do if I won the lottery? She said, look, if you won the lottery, I would take my 50% share, divorce you, move to a much better suburb, and sort of live a nice life with a toy boy. He said, okay, very good, darling, I've won the lotto. I've won $12, take six and get out of here. So please don't judge me on that, that's just my nature. So please, thank you for listening. Any comments or questions about this evening's talk? I've got a question, yes, sir. Yeah.
A few days ago in England got knocked out of the World Cup.
Yeah.
One of my cousins at home, true story.
Yeah.
And I mentioned it to him. And he said, oh yeah, we saw you in all the cup. He said, I watched the BBC as sports broadcast. Yeah. He said it said that there was a break in at England soccer coach was quite lost. So, yeah. And seeing the teams went away empty handed, they were looking for ideas.
Yeah. Okay, so now they've got an idea for me. No, this is saying about, this is for the recording here. He was saying that apparently England soccer team got kicked out of, or they lost the game in the World Cup. And actually I saw in the newspapers over here, they had all these headlines about just, you know, how sad and depressed the whole country was because it was a national disaster. And just how they were looking for some ideas of what to do next. So maybe you can send them a copy of this tape to, what was the name, Mr. Rooney, about no winners and no losers, and maybe that might sort of give them a bit more peace and happiness in life. But when you invest all of your happiness on sport, you know it's a gamble which you will hardly ever win. And that's why I think the spiritual life of understanding about not winners and losers, but acceptance of people and acceptance of yourself will save a lot of this terrible suffering which goes around in life. So thank you for your comment. Any other comments anyone has?